Now, I told you yesterday, if you were tuning in, that I had a pretty powerful story to share with you today. And this is an amazing story. It's heartbreaking at times and it's shocking at times, but it's also an incredible story of resilience and one Kerry mother's resilience in the face of domestic violence. Now, she has just written a book called Behind Closed Doors, and she's written it under her pseudonym, which is Eileen, is Eileen O'D. That isn't her real name, and obviously she doesn't want to be identified. And during the course of the interview, you'll gather as well that we have distorted her voice so that she won't be identifiable. But nonetheless, I don't think that takes away from what is a really powerful story. It's a story of a woman who was constantly abused in every possible way by her husband, eventually found the courage to leave him, only to discover that while he had access to their three children, he began beating them physically as well. And it's pretty hard going, I have to tell you, but I think it's well worth listening to this. So here's the first part of that interview with Eileen O'D. I visited her at her home to record the interview. And at the outset, I asked her to tell us a little bit about when the abuse began.
We were actually only married for about 4 years, but we were together from the age of 25. So we were together for maybe 13, 14 years. And it didn't start off bad, but it progressively got worse. And as soon as I got pregnant with my first child, it deteriorated completely. Uh-huh. Yeah. But it also was, I grew up in a house very dysfunctional. So
it seemed normal to you?
It seemed normal to me. Mm-hmm. It seemed normal that when I was 8.5 months pregnant, that I should be lifting a bag of coal in to light the fire.
That's extraordinary. And was it physical abuse?
It was everything. It was physical, it was emotional, it was financial, it was verbal, everything. I go into a lot of detail in the book, and my children were watching every single bit of it. And they were learning how to treat me. They were learning their normal. And it wasn't until one night when he called me one particular word, which was lazy, that I started listening to what he was saying to me, because I knew I wasn't lazy. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing. And then I went, and I'm a curious little thing, so I went off and I started investigating, and I went and I spoke to one of my mom's best friends, who I love. And she confirmed that, no, my mom didn't like the way I was being treated and that she didn't have a great marriage. So mm-hmm. that reiterated to me that this was what I had learned.
It was kind of history repeating itself.
It was history repeating itself. And that is what violence is. That is what generational domestic violence is. And it doesn't have to be hitting. It doesn't have to be being called dirty words every day. It can be somebody checking your phone. It can be somebody stopping you from taking the car. Mm-hmm. It could be somebody not wanting your friends to call and visit you and talk to you. And it could be, there are so many, it could be always having to ask for money. Mm-hmm. And when somebody has control, they're taking away your decision. They're taking away your right to make a decision for yourself.
What really struck me was you said, and I think this is even on the back of the book, that to the outside world, your husband was a gentleman. Talk about a Jekyll and Hyde. You obviously had the other side of it.
Oh, completely. He was an absolute gent. And people would have the most wonderful things to say about him. He was generous to a fault. Mm-hmm. He would do anything for anybody. And he was so funny, so entertaining, and so charming. He could charm
the birds off the trees.
Birds off the trees.
Yeah. I mean, he charmed me into staying with him for 14 years while he had me on my knees, knocking me on my head. He would actually knock on my head while I was on my knees, asking me if there was anybody in there.
Were you ever physically abused to the extent that you needed to go to the doctor or to the hospital or anything?
I wasn't really allowed to go to the doctor or the hospital. I had to go to work. But I was in work one day and I fainted. And they called the ambulance and I was taken to the hospital. And it turns out that I had some injuries. And of course, they called my next of kin, who was him. And I was, when he arrived, I was on a stretcher in the hallway and I was taken out and I was brought home and I was told to stay at home until I got better.
The injuries visibly healed?
Visibly healed, yeah. And then I was told to go back to work. So I did.
And you must have been afraid all the time.
I was, to a certain extent, but I wasn't, because this was normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a night that before the children were ever born, I was pregnant with my first child and I had been abroad and I had brought home some things and I was told to stand there while he threw them against the wall and broke them. And I watched as he just laughed because this was the game. I can't explain to you what distorted way of thinking. I can't explain to you. I mean, people would look at you and say, how did you stay? Number one, I stayed because it was normal. Mm-hmm. Number two, I stayed because he kept telling me that he would stop. And we didn't get married until I was pregnant with my third child, mm-hmm. because he promised me that he would never hit me again. That's why I married him. He promised me.
You believed him?
Of course I did. And any chance that I had of making it work, I took it.
Yeah, you wanted to keep your family together.
I wanted to keep my family together because as soon as I separated and as soon as I broke up my family, it was my fault. Anything that happened with the children was my fault because I broke up our family. Mm-hmm. And he used to tell me that you broke up, this is your decision. You have broken up our family and so they hate you for it. So don't blame them for the way they treat you. You broke up our family.
God, it's a lot to take in and I can't imagine what it would be like being in that situation. Did you ever tell anybody while all this was going on?
I didn't have to tell some people.
They copped.
They did. However, denial. One person had to pull him off me one night and I refused any help. The one time that I did ring the guards came, they were so nice. They asked him to leave. And when he rang me again, when he rang me to come home that evening, he said to me that he had met the guards in a coffee shop in Tralee by accident, but they advised him to tell me not to be ringing them because they knew it wasn't a real case of domestic violence, that I was kind of just overwhelmed with the amount of children I had and work I had to do. And
he obviously made that up.
He made it up.
Because the guards never do that.
No, but I didn't believe, I didn't realise that. I absolutely believed him. So then when my partner came along and when he was trying to get me to ring the guards, I was convinced I shouldn't ring the guards because this was normal. So why would I ring the guards? This is normal.
you mentioned about control. He controlled the car, he controlled the money. Like, could you, had you any life of your own? Obviously you held down a job, but could you see your friends? Could you have hobbies and pastimes and that?
Yes and no. So if it was for show, absolutely. We went to friends, we went to visit friends in another county and we'd stay overnight and they'd come here and they'd stay here with their kids.
And we did have
a social life, but it was mostly with his friends. Then I, when we moved back home, I would be allowed to have a dinner party. I'd be told who was allowed to come.
And then obviously he'd be here.
So he might be in another room or whatever. And there was, it was dictated. And it was to show how normal everything was.
All for show, yeah.
It was all for show.
Was alcohol much of a factor in all of this, Eileen?
Right.
I didn't think so. Because, and it's going to make me sound very foolish altogether, but I believed him. So, yes, there was alcohol. In the beginning, it wasn't that much. But I suppose, and... okay, so the way I'm going to explain it is there was so much else going on that you're so busy sorting things out that, you know what, he's an adult, and if he is drinking in the car, because I used to find cans of beer in the back pocket of the car. And I would say to him, why? Like the lads, if the lads drink them or whatever, don't be putting them into the back of the car. And he'd say, oh, that wasn't me. And there was no point in me debating him because I just get hit. So I stopped.
How often were you being hit? It's a very hard thing to answer.
I was being verbally abused every single day. I was being hit whenever I stood up to him. Whenever I tried to debate him. Whenever I tried to do something for myself. And he didn't want me to do it. That's when I was hit. So the more I stayed quiet and the more I went along with what he said, the less I was hit.
So you learned how to...
I learned how to show.
Play the game.
Yeah.
I did, yeah.
For now, though, we're going to stay with our interview with Eileen O'Dea, who has written a book entitled Behind Closed Doors, giving her first-hand account of what it was like to live with somebody who was constantly abusing her emotionally, financially and physically in every possible way that he could. Now, in the second part of the interview, I began by asking Eileen, what was it exactly that made her leave? When did she finally say to herself, this is it, I'm getting out of this marriage?
It's in the book. I was in the kitchen. I was after working, and then I had a little part-time job, and he picked me up from the part-time job because he used to pick me up and drop me off everywhere so that he knew where I was. And I came home. He wasn't at work at the time. And I came in and I started minding the lads, doing dinner, all the things that we do. And I was washing up the dishes and he came into the kitchen and he opened up the fridge and he said, I'm going to the shop. I couldn't eat. And I can't repeat what he actually said on radio. The schlop that you make.
But a stronger word than schlop.
Stronger than, yeah.
So, and he... called me horrible, horrible names and then looked at me and said, you know, you're one.
C word. Yeah.
Beep.
Yeah.
And he used the word lazy. Mm-hmm. And so that was my key. And because I'm not lazy. And I knew for sure I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so that was. Now, I was also a smoker. Mm-hmm. And I very rarely had money because I was a smoker. So I had made the decision that if I could give up smoking for 1 year, I could do
anything.
And mm-hmm. if I could give up smoking for 1 year, I was gone. Mm-hmm. I was leaving. It was over. So my eldest son, we were sitting down to dinner one day and he was sitting at the table. And you know that ad on the radio, it says one in two smokers will die of a smoking
disease? Yeah.
That came on the radio and he looked at the two of us and said, which one of you is it going to be?
Because you were both smoking.
Yeah.
So I rolled up my pouch and I handed it to the to my ex-husband and I said, it's not going to be me. And I gave up smoking. And 12 months later, I said, that's it. I'm done.
So you knew if you could do that, you could leave him. You were strong enough.
I could do anything if I could give up smoking.
So did you tell him you were leaving?
No,
because if I told him I was leaving, it was going to put me and my children at risk. I just knew it. Mm-hmm. OK, so I manipulated the situation. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't working for the summer. So I said, do you know what? And he was talking about another woman at the time and he was great friends with her. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got the hint that maybe, you know, this might be my opportunity. And so we found him a house and we moved him into the house. Myself and the children, we gave him everything he could possibly want. We gave him sheets, blankets, duvets, everything. And we had dinner in his house that night and I pretended nothing because this was just a trial.
This was to see for the summer
because he was always giving out. He was tied down to the house and he had to come home and he had to, you know, he was stuck here with three children and a wife and blah, 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 blah. So this was giving him freedom for the summer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we did, we moved him in that night. He was a bit lonesome. So the children stayed with him that night and I came home and then when the summer was over, we said we'd keep going until Christmas and then we'd keep going for another while. And it took 2 years for him to come to me and say, are we finished? And I said, we're finished.
And did he accept it?
He did.
But he didn't. He could no longer abuse me. So he changed his targets. Mm-hmm. And that's really when he started taking all the violence and the abuse out on the children. I didn't know that that was happening. But it really started.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it was my girl who came to me one night.
And I had bought them a Nokia. An emergency Nokia. And they were staying at his house. And because they had total access to him and he had total access to them because I thought it was just me. Mm-hmm. I was his target, not them. And she came one night and she said, Mom, this is what's happening in Dad's house. And that was the end of it. She didn't go back in again.
A few nights later,
we got in contact with the guards. We got in contact with the doctor and social workers. And a few nights later, my boys came home to me and they were black and blue.
And
oh, my God.
Yeah.
And my youngest boy was brave enough to come to the doctor with me. And we showed the doctor and we reported it to the, I think we reported it to the guards. And then my eldest boy, he wasn't able, but he did allow me to take photographs
to show the doctor. And then that brought in more Tusla, etc.
Oh my God, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And COVID hit and they stopped seeing him.
Yeah. So while most people were giving out about COVID, I suppose it was like respite for you, was it? It was.
Oh my God. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. And I had to start getting, I had to get loads of counselling. So Tusla got involved and there was a particular duty, a social worker who was beautiful. And she organised for me to have somebody come and help me. And but we had to be able to social distance.
Yeah.
So a friend came and they made a place where we could social distance in the garden. Mm-hmm. And the children, they got their own youth workers and people to, that they would be able to speak with. And they used to go for walks with them. And
yeah,
there is help there. Mm-hmm. The waiting lists are long. The funding is non-existent, but when you get the help, when you get it and you accept it and you listen to them, I can't tell you how good things get.
Well, that's good to hear.
And our judicial system needs to get with the times. Mm-hmm. They both for men and women. This isn't just happening to women. Mm-hmm. Both from because it is our children who are actually suffering. It is our children and the anger. They don't have the vocabulary to express what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. My daughter didn't have the vocabulary to explain to me everything that was happening. We're still finding out more stuff. Things are coming out all the time. My boys tell me things every now and again and it will just knock me for six.
I have to ask you this. As a mom who obviously loves her kids more than anything, it must absolutely have eaten you alive when you started abusing them.
It still eats me alive because I can't understand, one, how I didn't see it, or two, why they didn't tell me. I just don't understand it. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, there's a story that my youngest fella came home and he had bruises. And I said, what happened? And Dad had done it. And I said,
he said, but it was only a game.
It was a pinching game, Mom. But he was pinching them so hard that it was leaving bruises on their body. This was his game. And I said, OK, is it OK if I get into my car and I go down to your friend's house and I play that pinching game with them? And my youngest boy said, no, that wouldn't be OK, Mum. And I said, why not? And he said, because you don't know my friend well enough to do that.
Uh-huh. And so
it was the familiarity and the unconditional love that my children had for their dad that allowed him to do this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. All three of them.
All three of them.
Yeah.
And it was my girl who just, she was brave enough to say it and she was brave enough to help me stop it. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how proud I am and how amazing she is and how close I came to losing her. Mm-hmm. Because we have no idea what's going on in the heads of our children and we need to start minding our children. Mm-hmm.
Your ex-husband is now deceased.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was very interesting because I suppose a series of events happened and
I was shown by his family that I was
invisible.
And so something that was supposed to hurt me actually became one of my greatest gifts, because I was able to sit there and read what was written and know that actually I had made a decision to divorce this man. I had made a decision to leave him.
And so in him, when he died,
I was no longer his ex-wife. I was the mother of his children, and that was my only role, to be their mother, not to be anything else.
So in front of them?
They were allowed to do what they wanted. We had a mass, we buried him, we took down photographs and we looked and we talked about him. But in my counselling session, it was a totally different situation.
I was able to say what I wanted to say.
But in front of my children, because it was their father.
And whatever
he had done to them, that's, they will cope with that. And I will be there and we'll support each other in it. But they don't need me giving out about him while they're grieving.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Why do you think so many people don't come forward when their other half is abusing them physically, and that they stay in these relationships for so long?
I suppose, number one, it's very hard. It is extremely hard to ring the guards or to ring somebody and say, "Number, somebody that I love is flaking me. Somebody that I love is calling me these dirty names and I don't know why." And I know that he used to take his moods out on me. So he'd go off in the morning and I could get a kiss in the morning. And when he came home from work, every single frustration that happened to him inside in work was taken out on me. They loved him at work because he never gave out of work. He came home and he took all his frustrations out on me and then obviously on the children. So why is it hard to leave? It's hard to leave because where are you going to go? There's a housing crisis. Where are you going to go? Go to the guards and talk to the guards. Don't wait until you're in the emergency. Go today.
And I actually just want to say one more thing.
When he was gone, and when I was trying to rear my children and I didn't have any money, women are extremely resourceful. So two nights a week they were with him, and two nights a week I used to visit my friends. I used to go to their house, and that meant in my home, I didn't have to light it, I didn't have to heat it, and I didn't have to feed myself because I would go, I would get tea, I would get a sandwich, I would get biscuits or cake or something from them. And I would get to save that €7 in heat and light, and I would come home in the late night and get straight into bed. So that could have been €14 that I saved in those two nights. Okay. And that's how resilient women are when they need to provide for their children.
And that was Eileen O'Dea speaking to me earlier and recounting some of her story of what it was like to be a victim of domestic abuse for many, many years at the hands of her husband, the father of her three children. And I think what's possibly the most shocking part of that story was that She left him believing that once he was out of the house and she was no longer in a relationship with him, that was the end of it to an extent. She didn't dream he would lift a hand to his children. But sadly, that wasn't the case. And all three of his children ended up being beaten black and blue by him on different occasions as well. So it's just shocking. And you know the old expression, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. Well, that's very much to the fore there. I think, you know, as shocking as that interview was, the bit that made me the saddest of all of it, the bit that I found emotionally so touching, was at the very end there where Eileen speaks about when the kids were visiting their dad, and this is before she knew that he was beating them as well, her getting out of the house to save electricity and to save heat and going to her friend's house where she knew she'd be warm and she'd get a cup of tea and maybe a sandwich or a biscuit. And then knowing that, you know, I've probably saved a few bob now that I can keep for the kids. That's what it's like to be on the tail end of financial abuse, obviously. So it's a powerful story and so, so sad. But I can tell you that, oh, by the way, before I come to telling you about Eileen's life now, just to remind you about the book, it's called Behind Closed Doors, written under her pseudonym Eileen O'D. And you can buy it in a number of places. You can buy it in Polymath here in Tralee. You can buy it in The Dungeon in Killarney. And you can also get it online, buythebook.ie, if you want to check it out that way. A few people have texted in to say that they've read it already and saying how powerful it is. And there is a lovely introduction by somebody who works with women who are victims of domestic abuse. And he puts a lovely spin on the whole thing as well. I can tell you though that, and I'm happy to tell you this, that Eileen is doing incredibly well now. As you know, her abuser is no longer on this earth, and she told us how she feels about that. She's in a new relationship with a new partner. She speaks so highly of him. He sounds like an amazing guy. Her three kids are all doing extremely well, and you can imagine how close they are. And I met her daughter when I did the interview, and she's a fabulous girl too. So we can just wish them all the very best, and we can hope and pray that maybe somebody out there who is a victim of domestic violence might be inspired by Eileen's story, at the very least by the book. That might be the spur for you to do something about your situation. But if not, remember there's always help available from ADAPT. You can contact them here in Kerry 24/7 on 066 71 29 100. I'll give you that again, 066 71 29 100. And they're amazing at ADAPT. They do phenomenal work for women who are in situations like Eileen's. So best of luck to Eileen. Thank you to her for trusting me with her story. Sorry if the voice distortion was a little bit glitchy at times, but I suppose doubly paranoid about not revealing Eileen's identity. Just wanted to make sure we preserved her anonymity at all costs. So sorry if the voice change was a bit off-putting, but I do think the main point of the story got across nonetheless. Okay, we're going to take a break, folks. We've lots more to chat to you about between now and 3066 712 3666 to call us or send a text on 083 300 3300.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, sponsored by Kitty O'Shea's Seafood.